It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Right on the Money, special coverage with Dave and Dejanovic.
I want to take a peek inside of Dave's financial world with his wife. Do you guys... Okay, basically...
No secrets here.
Like the way you laughed, you're like...
Come up later, I'll tell you my social security number.
The way you laughed.
My credit card number.
I knew exactly where this is going. It's like, Deb, I have no say, so I have no comment. And what we're about to talk about over the next 8 minutes. The question
on
that we're
advice
asking,
of counsel, I've been.
This comes to us from Berkeley, and the headline is: Are joint bank accounts good for your marriage? So, first question is: Do you have a joint bank account that you're allowed access to participate in?
Oh, that's a great qualifier there. That's a very, very important qualifier. Do I have a joint bank account? Yes. Do I have access to that joint bank account?
Like you don't have a PIN number?
It's an entirely different thing. I don't have my own card.
Oh, no.
I have to ask permission to use it.
Okay, quick backstory. Did something happen?
Okay, in defense of my wife's totalitarian use of our joint bank account, the autocrat that is my wife.
I love all of this. I love all of
this. I may have taken advantage at times over the years of the joint bank account.
You call that freelancing.
I may have not, A, communicated purchases, B, authorized purchases.
Oh, you never got them authorized. And usually these are major... drop of the hat purchases, right? These aren't something that have been planned out for a while. You can say, well, I sent you a text 6 months ago, and now I'm just buying those $800 tires.
No. It was never the $800 tire that I got in trouble.
You dimed your way out of your bank account.
Oh, I don't remember eating it in and out four times last week.
According to new research, it is better for married or couples that are together to combine their financial resources. You're happier than those who don't.
I don't know if that's entirely true. That's been probably one of the big fights of our marriage is my freelancing.
Oh, you freelancing out and spending that In-N-Out burger. Well, traditionally, according to the article, newlywed couples pool their money together into joint accounts. But these days, especially millennials, choosing to keep their accounts separate. And so each participant in that relationship retains control over their own money.
How does that work? Like, listen, mine was a disaster. I mean, I'm terrible. I am untrustworthy with the joint bank account. But how does separate accounts work better?
Well, so let me ask you this. Riddle me this. Back it up. What do you do now for money? You just wander around the sign. I mean, you...
Deb, you want to buy me lunch?
You kind of do some of that.
So hungry.
Well, so what do? Do you have your own little pool of money?
I get an allowance.
Here? Oh, okay.
Yeah. And that allowance has ebbed and flowed over the years. I think my current allowance is zero.
Oh.
But no, yeah, it's
Don't
tricky,
look at me.
Right?
Don't look at me. Steve Harvey. So you know Steve Harvey.
The comedian.
Yeah, but he's
Is he joking about this?
No, I don't think so. He actually has a lot of food for thought and things that he says and things that could be made into bumper stickers. This may be a bumper sticker moment. He actually shared a lesson he learned on how couples should manage their money. He learned it from his financial advisor. Okay, take notes, Dave. He thinks that every married couple should have four accounts.
Every married couple should have four bank accounts. You should have a joint bank account. Out of that account, you pay all the household expenses and bills. After that's paid, you decide which percentage of that money should go into a savings account. In that savings account, it must require both of your signatures to move the money. Then you have a personal account and he has a personal account. He's not allowed to tell you what to do with your personal money. You're not allowed to tell him what to do with his personal money. Because even though you're married and you're a union, you still have to maintain some form of individuality so you can feel like a human being, you know.
That's fair.
No woman wants to go to her husband to ask for money to get her nails done.
And no guy wants to say, I need $10 for my pickleball fees. No guy wants to ask that. Though I've asked that three times last week.
Yeah. So let's listen to CNBC's David Bach. He said, and financial, you know, financial experts back this up as well. He said this is especially true, sorry, Dave, for women.
Definitely have your own separate accounts, too. It's absolutely critical, especially for women. The reason it's so important for women to have your own money is that over 40% of marriages end in divorce. And it's almost always the woman that is hurt the most financially in divorce. So I want you having your own investment account. I want you having your own emergency account. I want you having your own credit score. I want you ultimately, as a woman in a marriage, to actually be the one who's in charge of all the finances.
Well, my wife does run the finances in our family. Mm-hmm. So she pays the bills. I turn the money over. Here it is. I sign it off. She gets it. And then she distributes it. And it's great for us. She's very detail-oriented. I am not.
So that works out well.
So it works out great.
But you have your own little pool of money that you keep in whatever app or something like that, that if you need a little bit extra money. The article that we started this conversation with, Our Joint Bank Accounts Good for Your Marriage, one of the subtitles is Sharing Money Leads to Conversations. They surveyed 1,000 married couples about the relationship satisfaction and how they manage their financial resources. And then one of the things that came out of this study is it said, you know, we talk about it more because we are sharing the money. And that makes perfect sense. We did the route. We've done both routes. We did when we were married. One, we started things off where we both had our own individual accounts. And then it's like, 1 month, I don't know, he made the house payment and then I paid the utility bills and bought all the groceries. And the next month we flip-flopped and then it gets confusing and then you're trying. And ultimately what I found is it was hard for us to budget things that way. And it actually like led to more tense discussions because we didn't share a common microscope on the budget. My paycheck went into my account. His paycheck went into his account. And then it was like a toss-up as to who was paying what bills. I mean, we did a pretty good job of it. But then after a few months, it's like you lose track. And so we ended up with a joint account, which, as you experience, also brings on its own set of challenges. But I would definitely, if I had to vote, I'd vote for the joint account. There's certain things I would have done differently, maybe given him more of an allowance.
Yeah.
So he didn't have to beg me for $10 in pickleball fees like you have to do. But that's my take.
That would be my advice as well. I totally agree. I don't know how you could do it truly with separate accounts. The way you described it, like you got the mortgage, I got the utilities. That would just be a nightmare, I think. So ultimately, I think the joint account is a very good thing. But I totally agree with Steve Harvey there that you have to have a personal individualized account that I don't have to account for, that I don't need to tell. It's like, hey, give me the $100 a month, whether I spend it on In-N-Out Burger, pickleball, or, you know, throwing it in the wind. It does not matter. That is my money to lose. If I light it on fire and watch it burn in all its glory, that is my terrible decision to make.
Well, let's not let it go in the wind. Although if it does, have it blow my way. That's perfectly fine. Maria's up next. I can see her through the glass. I know she's got a lot of coverage today. We had that horrible accident involving a front runner train that we launched the show with. I know she'll have an update on that. Probably a lot more on Water Watch as well. More snow and rain in the forecast.
KSL FM Midvale, KSL Salt Lake City. Listen on the KSL News Radio app and in your car at 102.7 FM. KSL News Radio, Utah's all-day companion for news.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.